南无妙好人给叫南无妙好人给叫南无妙好人给叫 Sorry about that. Hi everyone. Hope this finds you in good health and secure. Thank you as always for being here for your practice. I want to talk a little bit today. This is a subject I cyclically talk about for the last 15 years on YouTube. Do you all know what a nebula is? Have you ever looked at one through a telescope or really good images of nebula? If not, I encourage you, pause this video if you will, or as you're listening to this video, because you can multitask. Go on Google and get some Hubble telescope, or even, I don't know if JWST has looked specifically at it. Yeah, sure it has. Pictures of nebula. They're in astrophysics and cosmology, they're generally talked about as star factories. What does that mean? This isn't going to be a science lesson. I want to do a thought experiment with you. Nebulae are, generally speaking, clouds, massive, I mean light years in size, right? Massive clouds of energy. Energy in different forms. Fairly simple, usually hydrogen, the most abundant atom in the entire cosmos. But in a nebulae, there's energy, there's heat, there's interactions, different types of hydrogen, different types of, anyway, there are enough basic elements in this cloud of, I know, particles, matter, but it's all energy. Actually, quite active, right? Moving around. Everything's always moving, but within these clouds. And interaction between these atoms, ultimately ending up clumping and or reacting with one another and eventually creating stars or types of stars. But from our perspective, I mean, these things are so far away that whatever is going on in there, you see these images and they're color-toned to help us see certain elements that are prevalent and areas where there's a lot of formations going on. A very Buddhist language starts to intermix with the cosmological processes and those words, right? So nebulae are huge clouds of formations into form. Lots of energy dispersed, moving around. And that's as much as I want to talk about a nebula, because when I refer to a cloud, or cloud of energy, and sparks, that's kind of the image I'd like for you to have in your mind, all right? So I wrote something down this morning because sometimes I want to make some kind of a visual presentation to you at some point that captures these teachings of Shakyamuni in a fundamental visualization, so that once you understand this, everything you read in Buddhism will be measured by this understanding. And I take my cue for this from Nichiren directly. Nichiren, as if you've studied it at all, you will know Nichiren as somebody who's extremely dedicated to practicing Shakyamuni's Lotus Sutra method for self-enlightenment, Buddhism, correctly, as Shakyamuni taught, yes? He's very strict. He doesn't tolerate any weird deviations for whatever reason. Buddhism is Shakyamuni's teaching, and we got to do it right, especially in this era where we're so distracted by all manner of things, yeah? And so there's certain basic things about Nichiren, that being the first. The second, I would say, is the tools he created to enable us to do, as Shakyamuni taught, in this era, immediately, right? Without distraction. The mandala certainly is a premium tool for subduing the monkey mind to gain this focus on our Gohonzon mind and open the Buddha eye, yeah? And thirdly, in the teachings themselves, he's very, very focused on the lifespan chapter of the Lotus. He's focused on the entire sutra. But as a matter of critical importance, for Nichiren, the lifespan chapter was the chapter where there was no longer any question that this was the most direct method for anyone to self-manifest Buddhahood, yes? Now, something I've talked about a lot, I think is quite related to the lifespan chapter, in that every sutra I've read, and I haven't read all of them, but I've read a great many, Shakyamuni's method of teaching and metaphor is constantly playing with this idea of time. And thanks to the brilliance of Nichiren and Tendai and other scholars, Nagarjuna, this idea of 3,000 realms in a single thought moment, which the moment you hear it, please don't glaze, right? People shut down and go, oh gosh, here we go with the numbers. So I wrote this document, I temporarily titled it Time, Stress, Anxiety, and Momentum. Stress and anxiety come from Shakyamuni. Time comes from the lifespan of the Tathagata chapter. It comes from throughout, but that's where it really comes to a head. And momentum, well, this is something you hear me say all the time, and I've discovered that some translations of the Lotus Sutra also include momentum and moment to moment, right? In the translations. So as much as I'd like to take credit, this is not a new concept. I'm using it quite prolifically. And so I wrote this little, it's barely a page, okay? And I want to read it to you. Just to constitute, and maybe I'll post it on threefoldlotus.com, just as another one of those documents that I have on that website that are free for you to download, read, print, whatever, as a reminder, a mindset. Reread it 6 months from now. Reread it and go, this means more to me now than it did when I first read it. Or I just got a new insight because, oh yeah, I forgot about this, whatever. This is how study and single documents like this, or like the cheat sheet that I did for chanting the seven characters, yeah? You know, they're helpful and then they're not helpful anymore, or you don't need them anymore, but you know, time goes by, time. And at some other point, you find yourself, what was that thing? And then you read it and it has a whole different meaning for you. I'm having this conversation with you and it's all about time, momentum, the changes of life. So let me go ahead and read this like you're holding me back. There's been for decades a fetish of the concept of time as happening as an idea of now, right? That's become really popular in the last several decades. Yeah? Live in the now. This is the now. Everything exists in the now. And, you know, that's useful as a stepping stone to get into the depth of Buddhist thought, although it's not always used in a Buddhist context. But I have a bit of an issue with it because even I've talked about, you know, being more localized in the moment now. But the now, I struggle with using that word because, well, you'll understand as I read this. Although this is a step toward better conceptions of what time actually is, quote unquote, the now, quote unquote, the concept of now continues a great many obstacles to enlightenment. It just expands on these obstacles that are inherent, and we need to get past it. To consider a now is only possible in its relation locked and dependent on past and future. Without a past and future, there can be no now. Do you see where this is going? A time sandwich, right? Past, now, future. Without past, future, there's no now. So what is now? This is a linear concept of time and existence itself, because we in samsara don't distinguish between existing, the ego self, yeah, and time passing. In Buddhist thought, this concept of time is the very nexus of our illusory samsaric idea of, quote, being. Oh, I forgot to get myself something to drink. By making this moment dependent on the, quote, past, we experience some physical and mental attachment, quote unquote, to support this moment while also anxious and fearsome of the implications of this moment as it inexorably pushes into the next moment. Right? And this is where I interject with momentum, right? When considered throughout our study of Shakyamuni's teachings, all the language of stories and metaphors are a deep dive into this very issue of our conception and adherence to linear time. Okay, I'm stating the obvious, right? Now, as a sandwich of present and future colliding into some sort of meaningful moment is the primary illusion that precipitates craving into some future and clinging of something in the past, in order to reason some, quote, now, we are truly locked into samsara. That's an important sentence. Do you see how I'm simply using the language of Shakyamuni and Buddhism to describe how we, you and I, construct mentally a now, quote unquote, a moment, if you will. Because once again, we see moments, we see now as dots that connect into a line. But I continuously remind us that we're not static. Nothing is static. Everything is in momentum, moving. And I describe to you what a moment is, this 0.0, what is it, 40 or 52 zeros before there's a number. I mean, such an infinitesimally little small unit. It's kind of ridiculous to think of it as existing. It's just, it's a flow. It's a passing by. It's an influence. Every moment is an influence. It's an instantiation of potential, right? In some sort of, we say, a stream. But I want to blow that apart. A missing component in this linearity is momentum. Momentum, and even this term is tricky, because it can be built linearly, right? Can present an idea that the very notion of moments is a personal, local, conscious perception of movement without location. I know it's starting to sound like quantum here, huh? It's okay. I have no problem with that. Moments when tied to consciousnesses become decoupled with the idea of universal or even local time. In other words, the moment, quote unquote, you and I experience together is not the same moment. It's not the same moment. The moment you are experiencing is of your own consciousness's construction, karma, and momentum. That is completely and fundamentally not my experience, etc. This concept of time breaks linearity. Witness any argument over the details of a past event between two or more people, and this disparity of experience becomes obvious in the extreme. Your now is not my now. So when we say now, we tend to pronounce it as though it's the now of the universe, the now of all nows, but it's not. Now I go back to my description of the nebula. Conceptualize life, the entire cosmos, as one immense, unfathomably huge cloud of energy, potential energy. And that this cloud is entirely made up of potential instantiating. Whether it's instantiating an atom, a molecule, a planet, a star, like a nebula. Picture every instantiation, no matter what it is, like a tiny spark. Just a momentary spark. Like a moment. And your conception of your life and your life experience is a selective, which spark did you pay attention to? See, that's not linear. That's everywhere all at once, right? So let me continue. How is now relevant then to our Buddhist thought and practice? How is it relevant? One way might be to focus our ideas of being in momentum as experience, quote unquote, rather than time or past, present, future. Still, even the word experience can be married to linear ideas, right? I don't have any experience doing that. It starts to get bogged down. Experience, think of it now, as a cloud of potential, as I was just describing, with constant random sparks of instantiations appearing and disappearing, could be an improvised or an improved visualization of experience. This huge potential going, pop, 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 all these little sparks of instantiation, experience. Occurrences happening non-locally, in other words, not in yourself, in your ego, in your place, and your time, but experienced only locally and disappearing in that same moment. In other words, in your consciousness, in your experience, your alertness, this would seem a much more detached experience of time. Observation, liberation from the confines, cravings and clinging of samsara. Shakyamuni's stories constantly challenge and play with these ideas. Our path, quote unquote, becomes one of movement in all directions at once, rather than some idea of progression along a linear moments. This is the very core of the conception of the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment of life. Life is everywhere, all the time, all at once. The unfathomably immense cloud of potential sparking randomly throughout space, witnessed by momentary pockets of sentience within all directions, without any direction, everywhere and nowhere, whose only purpose is to instantiate, spark, and dissolve. Which spark did you pay attention to? Does the, quote, where matter? Are you moving in an alternate direction? Has your life just taken a turn, as we might say? Experience becomes a direct exercise of awareness, witnessing the influences on our consciousnesses and the degree to which we are truly directing or responding to influences and momentum. This is the experience of time that Shakyamuni is chasing. This is the dislocation of identity that liberate us from samsara. So I'll work on cleaning this up a little bit, and I'm sure at some point when I feel confident, I'll post it on threefoldlotus.com. And I just want to relate one final thought to you as you might mull this over. I have talked about fusion with the mandala, the way that it seems to have movement. Well, certainly it does, because everything's in momentum. It's just that we don't see it that way. Samsarically, we take still images of everything, right? And we make it so. This now has a place in the now, in the past, and I can refer to it in the future. We are mired in this linear way of thinking about our experience. And Shakyamuni's crux and teaching of the Dharma, enlightenment, is the removal from that linear mindset, and that's not an easy thing to do, so that we notice that what we experience, what we think we experience as one moment after the next, one in a line, is actually one moment after the next all over the place. And as we know from study of the realms, Buddhahood, enlightenment, is within and surrounding and part of every other realm. That's an illustration in words of this cloud of potential instantiating randomly all over the place. But we, as we pay attention to one spark or another, put them in a row and conceive of them as a lifetime. Right? But that's not what's really going on. And as we open our Buddha eye, our Gohonzon mind, we start this shift. We shift away from this pop, 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 to this pop, 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 this dance. Wow. Everything, everywhere, all the time. Depending on what our mind, our consciousnesses are perceiving, we're moving all over the place. Timelessness. Buddha is innate, without time. And there's no reason our sentient mind wouldn't be able to see that, perceive that. That's the liberation. The liberation from habit energy, samsara. I hope that makes sense. I hope it brings some insights for you. It's something that I just think about all the time, and it influences everything I read from Nichiren or Shakyamuni, because it's in there. It's in every, even the translations, no matter how weird or wherever they go, in the center of every dialogue, this thought is there. I find it fascinating. Thanks for listening. I'll let you go. I'm going to do another Lotus Sutra video right after this. Don't know what I'll bring to that after talking about this. But as I say, it's always on my mind. So Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. If you can, just take a few seconds to like and subscribe. All the links and description, you know the drill, right? And abundant gratitude for all of you. However you're able to support. Patrons, obviously, I can't say enough about you. So thank you very much. We'll see you in the next one. Bye for now.